on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
People are a lot more open to implementing technology within their practices or within their teams, and there is a greater understanding of what technology can do. So I think that's definitely a key point to focus on as well, is to understand how technology will help a team, but also to understand what the limits are. So I think there used to be a conception that AI would replace a lawyer, which is not true, in my opinion, at least not yet. So I think really being open about that and setting expectations is also key.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast, a sub-series, the Legal Tech Startup Spotlight, where we talk with legal tech startup founders and the other incredible brains behind the business, and talk a little bit more about what it really takes to build a legal tech startup and what the opportunities now and in the future are. You're joined by me, your host, Hadassa Drukarch, and Marco Mendola as my co-host. And today we are speaking to Tim Pullen and to Leila Khan. But before we delve deeper into the topic of this episode, a quick word from our sponsor, BettyBlocks. Are you looking for a way to create solutions that will make legal processes faster, easier, and more efficient? Do you want to offer the best client experience with great digital services? Well, look no further than our sponsor for this episode, BettyBlocks. Rapidly build custom legal tech applications such as legal intake portals, ESG assessments without a single line of code. Start building your own solutions today with BettyBlocks. Now, I just briefly said it when we before we started recording, you both have an incredible resume behind you both and a lot of interesting things to talk about. So I really want to give the word to both of you to introduce yourselves and talk a little bit more about where you started and where you are at right now.
Thanks, Mark and Hadassa, for having us. It's great to talk to you guys. So my professional background and how I entered into legal tech, I started with doing a law conversion after my undergrad. And whilst I was in law school, I did some traditional work experience at law firms and as a paralegal, and also at legal tech startups such as Lexu and now Thought River. So when I was at university, legal tech was at a point where it was growing, but it wasn't where it is today, of course. And I found the area really interesting as tech disruption was quite prevalent in a lot of other areas. But as we know, in law, it's been a little slower to get started. And I was really interested in how the industry is impacted by technology, which led me to look into legal tech as an area to go into. So really my work experience and reading around tech's role in law led me to look into the legal industry and eventually led me to Thought River, which I found out more about actually attending a webinar held by Thought River whilst I was doing my law conversion.
Super interesting. Thank you for your brief introduction. And I'm also very curious, one of the things that we wanted to discuss is this topic of the law is a little slower than other industries and how Thought River also plays into that. So we're definitely getting back to that later on in the episode. How about you, Tim?
Yeah, so great to be on the show, Marco and Hadassa. Thanks for inviting us. So, I guess my journey began probably as a child of the 80s, being a bit of a sort of computer geek. But I became a lawyer, a tech lawyer, and, rose to become a partner in a couple of law firms back in the early 2000s. And then wended my way finally to the point where I decided I was going to begin the startup journey, which I did in little small steps. And why did I do that? I did it because I was frustrated, really, having sat through hundreds of transactions and led them in the UK and other parts of the world. I was frustrated at how disorganized those transactions are in terms of information. Being able to give different people the required perspectives on what's important in a deal and to be able to do that efficiently so that people make good decisions through the course of the transaction, you know, is very, very difficult, if not impossible, given the traditional way of contracting. So I resolved to do something about that to help people really understand in real time and much more efficiently what it is a contract represents for them, and to make better decisions. So I kind of started that journey, you know, started thinking about things, you know, when still working at law firms, but really, really kind of kicked myself into it in 2016 and started building a business. And, you know, I 2016 was kind of beginning of our journey. And I do trace a lot of legal tech back to around about that era. So some people, you know, started maybe a couple of years beforehand. But I think that really was the beginning of a journey for many companies now that are regarded as being kind of slightly more old hand in this industry.
Yeah, and also kind of elaborating upon that or touching upon what you both actually just said, there was this issue, and you specifically tackle it in the contract space. When I was having this discussion with Marco a while back already, it was interesting because he was also very much busy in trying to make contracts more visual, terms and conditions more understandable. And I remember you saying, Marco, back then that the whole point behind a contract is to establish relationships, right? To
very correct.
I never forgot that ever.
Thanks for stressing out. You know, I love this.
No,
of course.
Because I think it's interesting. There is clearly some sort of mismatch between what, you know, the purpose is and what the reality is, and how in the traditional legal space we contracts are being established, who's part of the process and what the process looks like. So I was just wondering if, before we actually delve into Thought River and what you actually do, could both of you, maybe, like, I'm sure both of you have ideas on this, dig a little deeper into what the exact problem is that we're facing here and why this is even the case, because it makes so much sense to do it a different way.
Look, I think it is the problem is to do with complexity. So many of the transactions that our clients are doing have a multifaceted and very complex set of rules and protocols and risks that relate to those deals. And so when you get experts, genuine experts, working on a particular deal in a particular industry, and they are recording what it is, you know, what the deal is, and some of these deals can be very long term, and often they can represent risks that can survive for 20 years or so. I mean, we work a lot with engineering construction firms, and you know, when they've advised on, you know, how to build a shopping center or whatever it is, you know, back in 2000, they can still be sued for that potentially right up to the current day. And if you think about that, you know, that those are long-term risks that have can do real economic damage. In actual fact, it can put you out of business. And so the point is that when you're sitting down and negotiating these things, there are 1,000 risks that you might actually be able to think of. But in the space of time you have economically to resolve stuff, you maybe can only deal with, say, 40 of them. But you know, when you're dealing with those, that itself can you know, be quite a complex task. And so I'm not being very clear here, but it's a bit like make up a new law here, but essentially the negotiation time you have kind of takes up the amount of risks you decide to address, takes up all the negotiation time you have, because there's always more that you could handle within that period. And that's the reason why you get such complexity, and because you've got experts and they have such experience, it's very opaque for people coming in from the outside to be able to easily penetrate, you know, the kind of dialogue they're having. So, you know, and I do blame technology for this is partly as well. So if you go back to the early 80s and you look at contracts, which are often for very important things and potentially very complex arrangements, you know, sometimes they're only 10 pages long, even less than that. And they're drafted in this really kind of high level, kind of handshaky kind of way. And the reason for that is they're all hand typed. I mean, the ability for humans to kind of just produce 100 page contracts, you know, really was much curtailed back in those days. But then along came word processing and you give that directly to Lord.
And copy pasting and templates came in.
And suddenly you can produce all this additional content. And so contract lengths just go woof. You know, on average, they've got much longer. And so, you know, complexity of contract or complexity of what people try to record in contracts has got steadily more complex, more just massive over the last three or four decades. And you know what? It's going to get more massive still because now people can put it in ChatGPT and like, you know, if people think, you know, you're...
Oh dear, we mentioned it. I knew it.
I was just
but it's true. People can be, you know, content is now a lot more effortless and you can handle a lot more things. And I believe that if the trend is true, this won't mean necessarily quicker contracts when you're using ChatGPT. It'll just mean much bigger contracts. But anyway, that's just a few points.
And just to add on to that, I think that's part of what Thought River does, Tim, is to address that complexity and try and make the whole process a lot simpler and smoother for legal professionals. I wasn't going to mention ChatGPT either, but now that you have, Hadassah, going back to the point.
You can, you're going allowed.
We
are not sponsored by them.
But you came in with the sharp pitch, so I like that.
Yeah. Going back to your point about being interested in sort of the legal aspect of developments in technology, I think ChatGPT will soon bring up a lot of legal questions as well.
100%. It's like that's the only thing we're currently hearing, I feel. I'm also curious to know to what extent that affects your work at Thought River also. I mean, I'm assuming like there may be overlap between the two. I don't know if you want to touch up on that now already or we'll do that later.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, it's great for us because I think to a far broader audience than ever before, and especially in domains like the law, we now have people very conscious of the power of AI, which I think can only be a good thing. But as ever, nuances in the detail. I don't think it's sensible to try to put the genie back in the bottle. That's not going to happen. I mean, it's good marketing, but apart from that, it's not going to happen. But the world is still in this kind of almost accelerated way, you know, frantically trying to understand what the new capability means. And obviously on the face of it, it does mean quite a lot, but you know, for example, we've just run I mean, the thing we do is really important. Is we tell you what's in your contract, and we do that in a simple way, and we do that with the latest AI, by the way. So we're kind of AI agnostic in the sense in that we, but you know, these tools are not necessarily super good at that job. And that's, we just ran a test actually this morning. I had some results back where we're running against the GPT model and the GPT model is not accurate. But then again, that's, you know, it doesn't know so much about our domain. So you would, but it's, you know, it's around about 20% less accurate, which is huge. So I think the world is learning about these tools and what they mean. I think there are, there's always going to be a range of opinions, people running around saying we've got a, you know, general intelligence has just been created, and other people's pointing out, well, no, but, you know, we have nonetheless got a very powerful transformer technology, which is going to change a lot of things. So But I think for us, it just means, you know, as a business, if you're going to do any startup, let alone a legal startup, it means just kind of not rushing at stuff, and you have to keep your focus. Focus is super important, and these things are a lot of noise.
Yeah, definitely.
To steer back the conversation to the importance of empathy and design thinking in legal tech, which is something I think extremely interesting, extremely powerful. I won't say as powerful as AI, because I'm not expert in AI, but so far, everything you know, I know so far from you guys, from Thor River, what you do, how you work. From my experience, I've always appreciated from your solutions your user centricity, the fact that what you develop and you try to build is not just focus on what you want to deliver as a business strategy, but you really. Give importance to what your user think and what your user says, and the importance again of design thinking methodology and user centricity. This is something that is not very common, I have to say, in the legal tech space. So my question to you, and I will start from Leila, how much do you think important is in your role liaising with clients and understanding their needs to be sure that you can somehow then squeeze all that juice and report back to your team internally to develop a better tool? I think this is the question I really wanted to ask.
And maybe in addition though to that, if you could also, for those who are listening, maybe just add like a brief explanation of what Thought River actually does, like in addition to this, to give some context maybe.
Fair enough, Adessa. I mean, that's
sure. So just to start with what Thought River does, and I'm sure Tim will elaborate on this after me, but essentially Thought River is a contract review and analysis platform where we're able to detect risks that lie within contracts and also allow users to go on to redline and make amendments to issues that they see within their contracts. So going back to your point about design thinking, Marco, so my role in Thought River is that of a customer success manager, which involves speaking to clients on a day-to-day basis and being their key point of contact. And naturally, out of that, a lot of what we get is feedback on the product, on usability, how easy and how, I suppose you could say, from a design perspective, how user-friendly it is to incorporate and use the technology on a day-to-day basis. So we get a lot of feedback from clients on exactly that, on the product and how friendly it is for them to use. And then a lot of that goes back to our internal teams where we brainstorm and we discuss how we can make improvements or changes to the product based on customer feedback, just so it is a lot easier and seamless to use. So I guess in a nutshell, what I'm saying is that my day-to-day role involves speaking to people every day and getting their feedback on everything to do with the platform.
Thank you, Leila.
Thank you. No, I think what's interesting, what's something that we also try to focus on is alternative legal careers, because you said you at some point made the switch to law and now you're a customer success manager, which is when you get into law school, at least not the even. I mean, I only graduated a couple of years ago from my bachelor's. Not the first thing you hear as a type of role that you would probably take on if you're in law school. So what really I'm curious to know from what led you to totally like not go for the traditional types of careers, and how did you find like this as a role to fit your profile, to fit what you were interested in? That maybe is the first
so
question.
When I was at law school, a lot of the talk was around the traditional legal career, which was doing a training contract and entering the traditional legal practice. So at the time, there was legal tech was starting to slowly grow when I was in law school. So there was a little bit going on, but not as much as there is now. And I think where it really came from was me attending things such as talks held by the universities or doing reading around legal technology. And at the time, there was a bit of a shift taking place where tech was penetrating the legal space a lot more than perhaps it had done previously. So I was just really interested. And as I said, I did both traditional legal work experience and work experience within legal tech, which is then what led me to explore the legal tech area more and eventually be part of Thought River. And I think now there are actually a lot more options, both within alternative legal careers as well as within law firms that have a focus on tech. So you see a lot, some of the traditional law firms now actually offering opportunities that go wider than the traditional training contract and actually focus on how tech is going to impact the legal profession.
I think it's interesting also, of course, that Thought River, by purely existing and the fact that you're trying to make a change in this space, is offering jobs like this and creating awareness around the fact that there are alternative careers that you can pursue when you're in law, which I think is very interesting. And like you said already, Leila, it's a development that's continuing, yeah. Right? So it's,
and I definitely think my legal think background and knowledge plays a huge part in working at even at a legal tech startup. Yeah.
That's also super important, I think. So it's not exactly. It's not being for nothing.
Of course, yeah, no, it's definitely there's a lot of value to studying law, even if you don't necessarily want to go down the traditional path.
And I have to say, we are super lucky to have Leila and colleagues, you know, coming in and giving us all their energy and their skills and knowledge, because it makes such a big difference to clients. You know, we are a software company, but we're also provide expertise as well, and that's super important to our clients. So, yeah, good combination.
Yeah, perfect example of an interdisciplinary approach. Tim, can you? Marco was like very subtly nudging me to ask you this question, but can you also maybe elaborate a little bit more on what on Thought River from your perspective, and also maybe where you know where you're at right now, what's developing, and what you we were talking about ChatGPT, but also what you think the capabilities of AI are now, but also in the, like looking a little bit towards the future.
Yeah, I mean, our mission is to help everyone understand any contract, and so we've had that mission for a very long time now, and so we're like a Hoover. We just Hoover up as much of the latest capability, including some of which we have created ourselves in terms of the AI components, in order to deliver against that mission. And we're pretty agnostic about that. So what we see at the moment, in terms of the rapidly accelerating power that we're able to draw upon in our own data science lab, is a very exciting time, because there are things we can do now that would have really been incredibly difficult to do even 18 months ago. I mean, there are things that we can do now in half an hour that would have taken several months 2 years ago, put it that way. And so it's a very exciting time to be pursuing this mission. And, you know, it just gives us so many more options on how we can meet those client requirements. So, I mean, for us, it's about understanding, and ultimately with most of our clients, it's about making that journey from I've just got a new contract to I've got a contract that can now be signed as small as possible, and all the features that go in that, you know, from the ability to be able to report very quickly on very detailed points of risk, to be able to communicate those, to be able to make suggestions on how they can be remediated and addressed, to be able to give people an aerial view, you know, does this really matter, does it not matter, all of those things which have really sort of dogged law, because that entire information realm has been impossible to compile, is now very possible to compile in the moment, and to be able to provide negotiators the world over with these with these insights that enable them to negotiate better deals faster. So, look, I think it's really exciting for us, and we remain very focused on that journey. Very specifically, I think we work with both companies and law firms, and I think we'll continue to do that. But what we have noticed is a real resurgence in law firms in the UK, but particularly in the US, where I think law firms now really see they're part of their role in the future as being drivers of this tech-enabled revolution, and that's really exciting as well, because that does signal real change in the legal services economy, which has, you know, for lots of, you know, people talk about people slow to change. There's lots of reasons for that, and actually they're all very human reasons and very understandable at the human level, but that is changing, and it's very exciting to be, you know, in the eye of the storm.
A lot of things you touched on upon that triggered some things in my mind, because going maybe back to when you started, I have several points on this that I'm interested to ask you. You said there's like a there's been a huge development. There are things that you're able to do with Alt River now that you weren't able to do even like a year ago. But when you started in 2016, I can imagine that the industry may not have seen these developments in the way they obviously see them now, and I'm just filling this in myself, but I can imagine that there was some doubt as to the ability of technology to really revolutionize the contracting space. What I'm interested to know from you, from when you started back then, also looking at VR becoming more interesting now, and I think the same approach being held maybe against such technologies or other emerging technologies, what were some of the things you were facing back then, and what are some tips you would give anyone that's starting this entrepreneurial journey now in other emerging technologies as you did back then?
So I think the first tip is you need to you need to have a vision. I think that's really important, but you must be very, not stubborn in your vision, because actually the process of starting a startup is not going on the straight and narrow. It's actually about discovering where, you know, this general area where you're looking, where you are going to add most value. So it's certainly, people think, you know, a founder, you know, like, you know, sat there one day, had this amazing idea, and they just went and delivered it, and the world went wow. And actually, the reality is normally a founder kind of steps off the cliff and kind of found a way of sort of flying before they hit the bottom, and that tends to be just through very rapid experimentation and discovery and engaging with market. So what is the most important thing is you need to find people who are potential customers who are kind of passionate about what you're talking about. And I was lucky. So back in 2016, we just found a few people, GCs in large companies, mainly law firms, who just said, yes, that is so exciting. We want to be part of that, and we're going to support you. I mean, they didn't exactly say it that way, but it was kind of that message. I remember a guy called Nick Tomlinson, who is still at Dentsu, the you know, the global advertising services business. I remember a meeting with him, and hopefully you won't mind me mentioning this, you know, but I'd gone in there to talk about a different idea I had, a bit of a different idea, and I noticed about 20 minutes into the meeting that Nick's eyelids were kind of looking a bit droopy and heavy, right? And I was thinking, God, this is going absolutely awfully, you know, because he's clearly so bored by what I'm saying. This is the worst possible response. But I remember I then sort of, as almost an afterthought at the end of the meeting, I said, hey, what about this kind of this risk review you could have before any of your lawyers get to look at a contract? And he suddenly went, blinked open and went, wow, that's brilliant. And hence I never bothered to do the previous thing. I embarked on risk review. And so always, I think, be wary of any founder who kind of declares that they were some kind of prophet. it's definitely true, you have to be quite unreasonable to be a founder. And that's really part of the journey, because you have to do things that people just don't normally do. But find those passionate people who will help give you your first pilot and test the temperature of their response. Actions are everything. You know, if people look passionate, just judge their behaviors afterwards. But generally, if you're onto something, you'll find the passionate people, and that is what makes all the difference.
This is so important, yeah. And you know what? It's so nice to hear from you, Tim, because you know the importance of a story when you are when you're founding or you're trying to pursue you have a mission, a vision. It's everything, and I think that's how people really understand the value of it. So thanks so much for sharing this. I think this is invaluable. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I love the example. So the real life example that you had in telling the story of both. Both examples. You mentioned people are generally slow to change. The legal industry is known to be slow in adopting new technologies and accepting new technologies and going with the flow with these developments. At Thought River, you really look at it from two perspectives, actually. On the one hand, you have lawyers making use of the platform, right? If I understand correctly. And on the other hand, you also have the eventual clients on the other side. I can imagine that there's a difference between perhaps the two in accepting new technologies and the way they perceive the technology that you offer with Thought River. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more about what the response has been since you started in 2016 from both sides, actually.
Yeah, so I think... at the start, there is definitely a little bit of time that it takes with both clients who are both in-house legal teams as well as lawyers for them to actually, you have to prove the value of the product and how it delivers, so how it can achieve a client's perspective, such as time savings or cost cuttings. And I think what is really important is to show people what we can do and how it's done instead of just telling them. So I think a large part of that has to do with engaging a client, getting someone on board who is dedicated and sort of willing to invest time as well as resource when it comes to implementing legal technology within their team or within that organization. And I think there that can sometimes be a bit of a challenge, particularly within a customer success team, because as we all know, lawyers day to day are very busy, but it really has to do with making sure we understand their goals and objectives and really work with them to make sure that the solution they want is implemented and is able to provide value. So I think that is where I would touch upon.
Yeah, so really understanding the needs of your clients and adding that genuine touch to ensure that you really know what they're looking for rather than just selling, but really knowing what do they need. And how.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely, there's been a lot of, people are a lot more open to implementing technology within their practices or within their teams. And there is a greater understanding of what technology can do. So I think that's definitely a key point to focus on as well, is to understand how technology will help a team, but also to understand what the limits are. So I think there used to be a conception that AI would replace a lawyer, which is not true, in my opinion, at least not yet. So I think really being open about that and setting expectations is also key.
I was in Legal Week in New York last week, and the phrase doing the rounds, led by a chief innovation officer at Fisher Phillips, Jen Mendez, was that AI is not going to replace lawyers, but lawyers with AI will replace lawyers without AI. And it's a subtle take on it, and it's catchy. But I think there's a truth within that, which you know is probably you could say you know. Lawyers with Microsoft Word are going to replace lawyers, you know, with typewriters. You know, it's a similar kind of concept, I guess. But I think it's true. I think it's really interesting the different attitudes and between lawyers in-house and lawyers in law firms. I think that there's a reasonably deep study to be done of that. But generally speaking, I think that the you know, the one of the big differences is that, you know, in a law firm, time is revenue, and in an in-house, time is cost, right? And that does drive quite different priorities.
And it's interesting what you just said about also these priorities, of course, and also what the quote that you just shared from Legal Week, that lawyers who use AI will replace those who don't. But I guess it also really depends on how you use it, right? Because at the beginning of the episode, what we spoke about was how technology kind of is a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, it has made things a lot more complex, but at the same time, Thought River, of course, is also based on technology and offers a solution. So I could imagine that those lawyers who are using AI and other technologies to make things even more complex will not be the ones that are going to get to this hub, but those who not only use AI, but actually know how to use AI, those would be the ones that are the winners or those that are, future-proof. But
We will see. One of the problems about the future is it is in the future, and sure. One of the things that humans learn is that we know very little in truth, far less than ChatGPT.
Yeah, we should ask. Moving towards the wrap up of the episode, can both of you tell us a little bit more, maybe about what you foresee as a future of Thought River, and anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye?
I think Tim, if you want to go first about the future of Thought River,
no, I want you to go first about the future of Thought River.
You're putting me on the spot. So without giving away too much of Thought River's future, I think so. Thought River, at least from when I was looking at Thought River as a student to now, for me, it's always been at sort of the front line of the legal tech market. And I think now that I'm actually a part of Thought River, I see us continuing to develop our capabilities in line with changes both within the legal industry as well as with technology. So I think there are a lot of exciting things coming both in terms of our product and how it's moving forward. And I think personally how that impacts my role developing is that it moves a lot with changes that are occurring both in the legal environment as well as with technology. So in terms of how this will impact things going forward, I think a lot of this has to do with being on top of changes and being very receptive, particularly within customer success, to what clients want and continuing to help them realize value as we develop our product and develop changes in the market.
I think that's a pretty strong look towards the future. Tim, do you have anything you want to add?
I don't want to ruin it. I think Layla's said it really. I mean, we want to stick to our mission. That's really important for us. But I think there's I think the world is opening up. And I think there's a lot of very exciting opportunities.
Yeah. It really was a true pleasure to have you both with us. I really enjoyed the conversation, both of us. If I can also speak for you, Marco. Yeah,
it was great to talk to both of you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast.